You're hearing The Drive with Derek Gilbert on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com.
So Nancy Pelosi wants a military jet to fly back and forth between D.C. and San Fran, and then she sounds the warning on global warming. Neil Bortz will offer his take on this and much other foolishness from our nation's capital tonight after 9 o'clock on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com. I'm Derek Gilbert. This is Off-Road Friday on The Drive. It's when we kind of throw away the format map and we look at things that's a little more esoteric. Our guest now is the author of a three-volume alternative to the conventional view of American history of the last 60 years. It's a three-book set called Sinister Forces, A Grimoire of American Political Witchcraft. Book one, The Nine. Book two, A Warm Gun. And book three, The Manson Secret. Peter Lavenda, welcome to the Eagle 93.9.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Peter, Sinister Forces starts off with a recollection of a visit you took to Ashland, Kentucky. Why Ashland, Kentucky?
Well, it's a funny thing. Ashland kept coming up on my radar screen for some reason. I wanted to go to Ashland because Charles Manson grew up there. And I wanted to see what was different about Ashland, Kentucky, because right across the river from Ashland is another town called Canova, West Virginia, and Bobby Joe Long was born and raised there, another serial killer. And not far from there was Henry Lee Lucas grew up in northern Virginia, southern West Virginia.
Another infamous serial killer, yeah.
Yeah. So I was wondering, you know, mass murderers, serial killers, was there something in the water? was there something in the air? So I decided I was doing research on the Manson family back in the 80s, I guess it was. And I decided I wanted to take a look and just see, you know, the town. And driving through the town, I was in for some surprises. You know, the Indian burial mounds in the center of town, Ashland Petroleum, which was belching all kinds of clouds of noxious fumes all over the place. Just a strange, you know, juxtaposition of things. And it started getting me thinking about coincidence and synchronicity and, you know, are there connections between events that we don't really see on the surface, that are buried deep within within events and within circumstances?
In promoting this conversation during the week, I've been calling this set sort of like the 6 degrees of Charlie Manson, and we'll kind of get into that over the next hour and a half.
That's pretty good.
What, and I can't take credit for that. Sharon, my wife, came up with that one. What motivated you to start pulling at these threads to see what you unraveled?
Well, it actually began with research that culminated in my first book, which was called Unholy Alliance. What I was doing, I was interested in the interface between religion and politics, and how does one influence the other? Is there really a separation between religion and politics? Is it too optimistic to think that there could be, or too pessimistic? Many people in the world believe that that's not possible. In Islamic countries, for instance,
sure,
church and state have to be the same. So I was pondering that, and as I was studying that, I was in the National Archives, the Library of Congress. I was doing research. It came to me that the Nazis were a prime example of a state in the modern times that wanted to eradicate Judaism and Christianity, create a new state religion as part of their political agenda, or maybe a political party as part of their religious agenda. And I started to research that, and I found so many connections between what was going on with the Nazis and what was going on in American politics back in the 1920s and 1930s that I started pulling at a lot of threads. And Unholy Alliance was only going to be one chapter in Sinister Forces, and it turned out to be a book. And if you've read Sinister Forces, I know you have, each of those chapters themselves could probably be a book. But I didn't have time to write all those books, so I put it into a three-volume set. But really, I was looking for coincidences, connections between events that we don't normally see. And the Third Reich and the history of the Nazi Party gave me a lot of that, gave me a lot of places to start looking.
Author Peter Lavenda is our guest on the Eagle 93.9. So Sinister Forces then sort of evolved from your work on Unholy Alliance. What were the threads then that connect the Nazis of the 30s and 40s with America of the 50s and beyond?
Well, in the first place, you had a lot of American support for the Nazi Party in the early days. Henry Ford, for instance, of Ford Motor Company, was a famous supporter of the Nazi Party financially as well as morally, you might say. Henry Ford was awarded the highest honor that the German Reich could give to a non-German. In the same year he won it, Benito Mussolini won it. There were portraits of Henry Ford in the Brown House, the Nazi Party headquarters in Berlin. So, I mean, he was a major contributor. Needless to say, I mean, there's been some press about this, but the Bush family was a major supporter back right. in the 1920s and 30s. So we have a political concept that's kind of sinister to me, that no pun intended, but it sort of warned me that maybe there were connections that I wasn't looking at clearly, because like most Americans, I grew up with, you know, learning history in school, in high school, and being told that these were the events, this is how it happened, but there's no connective thread between them. And when I started to research the Nazis, I came across the Bush information and Henry Ford, the books that he had written and the articles he had written in favor of the Nazi Party, and how we helped to finance some of the Nazi racial scientists and brought them over to the United States for meetings and for conferences and stuff. So all of this, you know, raised some alarm bells, and I started to ask myself, well, what does all this mean? You know, is there a hidden agenda? Is there a secret government, like Bill Moyer said about the 10 years, 15 years ago, I guess, during Iran-Contra? You know, is there something else going on? And I really needed to find out for my own peace of mind, if nothing else. And what I found is that the answer is not always that easy. The answers are not always that simple. Sometimes the connections are there, they're definite, they're very hard connections, but they don't make any sense on the surface. It's not as easy to explain as a bunch of guys sitting around a room and conspiring to take over the world. You know, sometimes the threads of coincidence and synchronicity and meaning are different, and they give you a kind of different perspective on everything.
Yeah, and definitely want to touch on that as we go forward here. Now, Peter, what were the... How did the importation of the Nazis into the United States after World War II change the United? How did it change us?
Well, we made a deal with the devil. I think if you people are becoming sensitive to this now. There have been a number of films and books in the recent last year or two that are starting to address this very serious problem, this moral problem that America has. We, because we were so afraid of communism. Or some of us were, anyway, were very afraid of communism. We felt that the Nazis represented a lesser threat. And after the end of the war, really before the end of the war, in the last year of the war, the United States made concerted efforts to attract Nazi scientists to come to our side. We knew they were working on a lot of very advanced technology at Peenemünde, which was their secret base in northern Germany, where they were shooting the V-1 rockets and V-2 rockets over in England. We knew they were operating on all sorts of channels, doing all kinds of good science and technology. We didn't want them to fall into the Soviet hands. So in the very beginning, we started to recruit Nazi scientists to come over. At the end of the war, we tried to find as many as possible. It was a real race to get as many of these scientists and their technology and their documents and notes of their experiments into the United States. But that wasn't all, because we were still fighting the Soviet Union, not just on a scientific front, but on an intelligence front, on a political front. We then began to recruit Nazi spies wholesale, I mean hundreds of them, working for the CIA in the very early days of the CIA to fight against the Soviets. So we made a deal with the devil. We decided that we would ignore the fact that the men we were bringing over were war criminals responsible for some of the most heinous crimes that we can imagine, certainly the most heinous of the 20th century at that time. And we're talking about the Holocaust. We're talking not just that, but 20 million Russians that were killed during the war. Huge numbers, almost the entire Gypsy population. And yet we had no compunctions, no moral problem with forgetting all of that, wiping their slates clean, protecting them from the Nuremberg trials, bringing them over here to our side and saying, you're going to have a nice job, a cushy salary. And in the end, some of these guys wound up on the board of directors of companies like Bell Aerospace. On Bell Helicopter. I mean, we had Walter Dornberger, who was in charge of Nazi scientific experiments at Peenemünde using slave labor from the concentration camps. And this guy winds up as on the board of directors of Bell Aerospace.
Huh.
And, of course, Wernher von Braun, who's very famous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of these guys willfully and eagerly employed slave labor from the death camps. And yet these guys wound up in very enviable positions in our country. So something went wrong with our perceptions. We betrayed, in my mind, something of what it means to be an American, you know, to stand up for certain principles, we decided that we couldn't afford to have those principles, that we were dealing with this vicious enemy called the Soviet Union, and we had to do whatever was necessary to combat them. And that meant essentially shaking hands with the bloodied hands of the Nazis.
We're talking with Peter Levenda. He's the author of a three-volume set, Sinister Forces. Making a deal with the devil, is it just an analogy, or is there something more to it? I'm Derek Gilbert. This is Off-Road Friday on The Drive, and you're listening to the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com.
Thinking outside the cage, this is The Drive and Off-Road Friday on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com.
Now, I don't know ready-to-wear from couture. In fact, I don't even know how to say couture, but I do know when high fashion is a good thing. The Eagle 93.9 is proud to be part of Columbia's Model Citizen. This is a fashion show featuring local designers hosted by Jan Carl of Entertainment Tonight. It's to benefit the Thompson Center for Autism and Neurodevelopmental Disorders. That's next Saturday night at the Holiday Inn Executive Center. You find complete details at the website, theeagle939.com. 5:50 in Mid-Missouri, I'm Derek Gilbert, and we're joined by Peter Levenda. He's the author of a three-volume set called Sinister Forces, A Grimoire of American Political Witchcraft. Peter, just for people who aren't familiar with the term, what is a grimoire?
Yeah, grimoire is a medieval term, although they use it now pretty frequently in books on anthropology and religion. A grimoire is a sorcerer's workbook or a manual of magic. Grimoire usually has the names of evil spirits, demons in it, and their seals and symbols and instructions for how to summon them.
Okay, and so this is your attempt then, as you say, to try to examine the interface between religion and politics in American history, and you're turning up what appears to be a grimoire that has been developed.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so specifically then, what did we try to extract from the Nazis that we brought over after World War II? And how did we try to put that information to use?
Well, there were a number of avenues. Besides the intelligence operations we had running in Europe, which were staffed by Nazis and former SS officers, and aside from the rocket scientists we brought over, there was also another element that really no one focuses on very much, and that's the medical personnel that we brought over. Now, here are people who are responsible for some very, very hideous experiments on human beings in the death camps. All sorts of horrible experiments on live persons in chambers where they would withdraw the oxygen, for instance, and see how long a person could survive without oxygen, or increase the pressure or decrease the pressure, low pressure, high pressure, altitude experiments, all this sort of stuff. The doctors responsible for that were brought over, as well as doctors who were responsible for some of the psychological experiments that took place. So there is a belief, and until all the documents are declassified, we'll never know all the details, that some of these Nazi medical scientists were up to their old tricks back here in the United States, particularly at a place in Texas called Randolph Air Force Base, which was the Aerospace Medicine Center for the United States Air Force, or the Army Air Force at that time. So we brought over a lot of the Nazi scientists to work there, and they were specializing in all sorts of medical experimentation there. There have been reports of children who grew up in that area around Randolph, which is near San Antonio, I believe, of with strange memories and buried memories and repressed memories of things that could have been experiments on children. So these are some of the things that we have to contend with. Some of the MK Ultra experiments the CIA undertook, which are very well documented, I mean, as much as they can be since most of the papers were shredded. But we have about 10,000 documents of MK Ultra that I've gone through personally, and there's a lot of evidence there to show that what the CIA was up to at the time of these experiments had correlated with some of the Nazi experimentations, particularly with drugs like mescaline and marijuana, etc.
Author Peter Levenda is our guest on the Eagle 93.9, his new three-volume set, Sinister Forces. Peter, for people who aren't familiar, MK Ultra, what is that?
Yeah, that was... The CIA was involved in what we call mind control experimentation. Now, I have to tell your audience right away that when you use the term mind control these days, mm-hmm. people have this assumption that you're wearing an aluminum foil hat, you know,
right.
and you're hearing voices and stuff, and you're just off the deep end if you're talking about mind control. But this was a serious program, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, this went on since 1950 when it was known as Operation Bluebird, and then it underwent a series of name changes within CIA. But at the end, what we have was something called MK Ultra. And Ultra was the coverall umbrella term for a whole host of psychological experiments that the CIA was undertaking on living human subjects in the United States. And these subjects would include violent offenders in prison. It might include prostitutes, criminals, all sorts of people, probably the last people you would want to dose with LSD or with amphetamines or something else to see how they would react, if you know what I mean. These are the last people you would do this. And we massively dosed people in our prisons and our mental institutions and in various secret locations around this country and outside the United States and conducted these experiments over a long period of time. Usually the people who were involved in this were totally unwitting. They did not know it was happening. There were even experiments on children that have been documented using large amounts of LSD, more than would be a normal dosage for a person using this as a recreational drug or something. So all of this came under the MKUltra umbrella. So what the CIA was trying to do was they were trying to find out how they could get into the human brain, how they could manipulate memory, and how they could create the perfect assassin.
Like the Manchurian Candidate.
Precisely. That was what made everyone very nervous. There were stories of American soldiers coming back from the Korean War who had been totally brainwashed, who were repeating all sorts of stories. They were attacking the United States. They were making all sorts of lies on television and radio. And it made CIA very nervous. They said, there's some weird Asian technology that's going on here that's turning, you know, American men into some kind of zombies or robots. And they were afraid that one of these guys would come back and maybe commit assassinations. So CIA thought to itself, well, we have to fight this somehow. We have to counteract this. How do we do it? We have to have our own brainwashing program, our own mind control program. And that's how it started, roughly in October 1950 when the Korean War started.
And hence the Manchurian Candidate, which was pulled from distribution for quite a long time. But instructional when you're looking at the type of person that the CIA was trying to create under the MKUltra program.
Exactly.
Mind control on violent offenders in prison. Remember that phrase. We're talking with author Peter Levenda about his three-volume collection, Sinister Forces, A Grimoire of American Political Witchcraft. We'll pick up there and find out how this relates to Charlie Manson and all sorts of other events in American history over the last 50 or 60 years. I'm Derek Gilbert. This is The Drive, and we're going through Off-Road Friday. This is the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com. Our conversation continues in 10 minutes.
Like a lift kit for your brain. This is Off-Road Friday on The Drive on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com.
Just after 6 o'clock in mid-Missouri, I'm Derek Gilbert at the wheel. The conversation we're having tonight is not one you can really start in the middle and figure out where we're going. So if you are coming in late with our discussion with author Peter Levenda, I suggest you visit the website later tonight, theeagle939.com. Check out the podcast. This will be put up there along with other highlights from this program and Tim Murphy in the early morning. But make sure you check it out and go through the whole thing. Peter Levenda is our guest. He's the author of a three-volume set, Sinister Forces, A Grimoire of American Political Witchcraft. His website is sinisterforces.info. And Peter, as we left off just before the break, you had talked about the MK Ultra program, CIA's attempt to experiment with various methods of mind control, and that they were working on violent offenders in prison.
That's correct.
Yes. Now, is this where Charles Manson enters the picture?
Well, that's where he enters the picture for me. Some of the places that Manson stayed, well, he was in prison frequently before the Manson killings, the famous Tate-LaBianca killings were committed in 1969. So prior to that, he's been in and out of prison his entire life. And some of the places he was kept were places where the mind control programs had been in effect. Not only Manson, but another serial killer, Henry Lee Lucas, also spent time in some of the same locations. So we have violent offenders at federal prisons who are being given massive doses of drugs, or who are subjected to different types of behavior modification experiments, perhaps hypnosis, other types of experimentation involving electricity, electrodes, lobotomies, that sort of thing. All sorts of different programs were being employed on these people. And the problem with that, aside from any moral considerations, the problem is that when Richard Helms, who was head of the CIA at the time of the hearings into this problem, when he was in danger of going in front of Congress to report on this, he had all the documents on MKUltra shredded. So we don't know who was the recipient of any of these drugs, the mind control programs, the brainwashing experiments, nothing. We have a few tantalizing references in some accounting papers that managed to survive the shredding, which is all we have left of the MKUltra documentation. So we know some of the names of the institutions, of the prisons where these things were taking place, but we don't know the inmates' names who were used as the guinea pigs in these experiments. All that information was destroyed by Dick Helms back in the 1970s. He and his sort of Svengali-like character, Dr. Sidney Gottlieb, who was the person who was running the MKUltra program for many years, they both got together and shredded the documents. At the same time, he said there was no proof that any of the experiments had actually worked. But at the same time, he shredded the documents. So
so we can't verify.
Exactly.
We've got his word for it.
We have his word for it. And why did he shred the documents if there was no problem, you know, if there were no, if nothing happened, if it didn't work?
Yeah.
So there would be no point, right, in shredding the documents. But he did. He shredded thousands and thousands of documents. So we don't know if Charles Manson was the recipient of any of this technology while he was in jail or any of the other serial killers. But I'm sure there are people walking the streets today who went through these programs and who are out walking around, or at least were walking around the 1970s, 1980s, and perhaps today. We don't know who they are, but they were subject to this type of intense interference in their psychology. You know, in the old days, thousands of years ago, or even recently in some remote areas of the world, these techniques were used to create altered states of consciousness for religious reasons. You know, in shamanism, for instance, people would undergo all sorts of sensory deprivation. They would see visions, hear voices, and then they would come back as healers, as people who had touched the divine. But they were subject to these programs under the guidance of spiritually advanced people, gurus, let's say. In the CIA scenario, there were no gurus. There were no spiritually advanced peoples, but the same technology was used on human beings, and then they were dropped. So imagine going through a spiritual initiation, a process of spiritual discovery, and suddenly the whole thing is cut off, and there's no support system, and you're hearing voices, and you're seeing things, you know, and you don't know what it all means, and you're thrown on the street. And that is essentially what I believe happened with the massive experimentation that the CIA did in the 1950s, 60s, and as late as the 70s.
We're talking with author Peter Levenda about his three-volume set, Sinister Forces. Book one is titled The Nine. Book two, A Warm Gun. Book three, The Manson Secret. So, Peter, these are the... So this is where the rubber meets the road, religion and politics, if you will, the political witchcraft.
Yes.
It's your contention, then, that these experiments conducted by the CIA in the attempts to control people were breaking down barriers between the natural world and the supernatural world?
Yes, essentially. That's exactly right, because they were using the same techniques, the same technology that religious organizations and secret societies and shamanistic groups have used for thousands of years, using precisely the same techniques, even the same drugs. I mean, they sent people down to Mexico and to Central America to find the drugs that the Indian shamans were using down there, the Native American healers. When they would go into trances, they would chew a certain herb, or they would eat a certain mushroom, as we all remember from the 60s, perhaps. So these were the things the CIA was interested in. So they were using the same pharmacology. They were using the same drugs, some of the same techniques, hypnosis, other types of mind control efforts, but there was no spiritual program. It was strictly the CIA's rummaging in the human mind to see if it could control memory and volition, to see if they could make you do things you wouldn't ordinarily do and forget about them later.
Now, I want to take a step back. One of the things I found most fascinating in book one of the series, The Nine, were the odd connections between Lee Harvey Oswald and a group of very wealthy people who were seeking spiritual enlightenment or contact with the other side. First of all, who were or what is the Nine?
Well, that's a very good question, and that's a question that would take volumes to answer. Mm. Let me break it down kind of shortly. The Nine was came into existence in the early 1950s during the Korean War in a small town in a farmhouse in Maine. And the person in charge of this program was a guy called Dr. Andrea Puharich. Puharich was a military officer and a medical doctor who worked at Edgewood Arsenal, the chemical biological warfare operation that we had. So he was involved in chemical and biological weapons on the one hand. On the other hand, he was fascinated with the supernatural and the potential of using ESP for military purposes. And he gave speeches on this to Pentagon officials from time to time. So one day, in the dead of winter in Maine, he got a group of people together, altogether nine people, and a medium, an Indian medium, a Hindu medium. And they made contact with a group of extraterrestrial beings or supernatural beings. We're not really quite sure which. There were nine of them, nine spiritual forces, and nine people at the seance. And the people who composed this small circle of nine people involved some of the wealthiest families in America. We had a DuPont present. We had an Astor present. We had people, we had the Forbes family represented there. And if we talk about the Forbes family, of course we can talk about John Forbes Gary and all
right,
that.
Right, sure.
we're talking about some very prominent families. And they were all sitting at this seance. There were only nine people, so you can imagine how intense that group was when they represented some of the oldest money in America. And these were people who wanted to contact these spiritual forces. Well, let's fast forward a few years from 1952, 53, roughly, when this was taking place, and they were all told that they had a spiritual mission, you know, to save the planet, essentially. We fast forward now to 1963 in Dallas, Texas. Now, we have Lee Harvey Oswald and his wife, Marina. They're broke. They have no place to stay. Lee is out of work. He's looking for a job. His wife, Marina, strikes up a friendship with a woman called Ruth Payne. Her name was Ruth Payne. And Marina stays at the house of Ruth Payne. Ruth Payne wants to learn to speak Russian. That's the story anyway. And Marina Oswald, of course, is a Russian. Lee Harvey Oswald had married her in the Soviet Union. Then he defected back to the U.S. For those who understand this story, that's all familiar. Marina and Ruth hung out together. They lived together in the same house. And in September of 1963, August and September, Ruth Payne has to go and visit her family, her parents and her her in-laws, her husband's family. Her husband's family are the same people who were attending that seance in Maine in the 1950s, Ruth Forbes Payne. Ruth Forbes Payne is her mother-in-law. That's why she has the name Ruth Payne. She's married to Michael Payne. Michael Payne is the son of a man who's very famous in spiritual circles, called Arthur Young. Arthur Young is a man who wrote books like The Geometry of Meaning, The Reflexive Universe, a very deep thinker, but the inventor of the Bell helicopter. So here's the inventor of the Bell helicopter during World War II. He quits science and engineering and devotes himself full-time to philosophical supernatural pursuits, yoga, ESP, Eastern religions, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
He's married to Ruth Forbes Payne, who is now Ruth Forbes Payne Young, excessive nomenclature there, but anyway, representing a lot of wealthy families. The Payne family, also very prominent in Boston, an old wealthy family. So Ruth Payne from Dallas in September is going to visit Arthur Young and Ruth Forbes Payne. Okay, so the connection with the Nine is made. However, there's more to the story. Ruth Payne has a very close friend, who is a woman she's known for years, who was the mistress of Alan Dulles.
Okay.
When Alan Dulles was head of the CIA, before he was head of the CIA, when he was running OSS operations in Europe during World War II, we're back to a Nazi connection again, but we can go into that some other time.
Right.
It's just too long and too many connections. So we have Alan Dulles' mistress hanging out with Ruth Forbes Payne. Ruth Payne goes up to visit, and she's got Lee Harvey Oswald staying with her and Lee's wife staying with her. She visits these people. We don't know what was discussed. And, of course, in November of 63, the assassination takes place. Ruth Payne is then questioned by the Warren Commission. And every time she gets close to talking about this little episode, somebody changes the subject. And if you read the Warren transcripts carefully, you'll see who that is. It's Alan Dulles.
Alan Dulles, whose mistress was, okay.
Whose mistress was a confidant of this whole family. Alan Dulles had to know Ruth Payne. He had to know who she was. I mean, through his mistress, if nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
He knew what was going on. So, but that wasn't all. You think that would be enough?
I mean, that's a lot.
That's a lot, but there's more.
Okay.
Hold on to your ad. So one of the other, the person who introduced Lee Harvey Oswald to the Payne family in Dallas, Texas, was a man called George de Morenschild, who was a Russian nobleman, an anti-communist, some say a pro-Nazi, with CIA connections, as we later discovered, with declassified CIA documents. He was used as a kind of contract agent from time to time. De Morenschild was very closely involved with the Nine, with Andrea Puharich, with a man called Wasson, who was hunting magic mushrooms for the CIA in Mexico and Guatemala. So we have, again, George de Morenschild as a charter member of the Nine, Ruth Forbes Payne, Arthur Young, all of these people who were at that seance, all knowing Lee Harvey Oswald. What are the odds of that happening?
I'd say pretty small. Especially, you know, what I don't understand is when Oswald was supposed to be an out-of-work guy in Dallas, he suddenly connected with these very wealthy old money people. What are the odds that they would even cross in social circles?
Well, exactly. Why would they even have talked to him?
Exactly. You know? Right. And yet they've got him and his wife staying at the home of the Paynes.
Yep.
And then connected to these people who are communicating with these, what they believe to be extraterrestrial beings.
Right. Exactly.
Okay.
So he's surrounded. He didn't have a chance. I mean, Lee Harvey Oswald had no chance. He was surrounded by people who were connected to the secret society that had its origins in that farmhouse in Maine in 1952.
We're talking with author Peter Lavenda. His three-volume set, Sinister Forces, goes into these strange and highly unlikely connections. Our conversation... catch my breath here for a minute. Our conversation continues in 3 minutes. This is Off-Road Friday on The Drive. I'm Derek Gilbert. You're listening to The Eagle 93.9 and TheEagle939.com.
The ATV of talk shows. This is The Drive and Off-Road Friday on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com.
News doesn't stop on the weekend, and neither do we. Matt Drudge is here with the Drudge Report. Wrap up your weekend with a look at what's been going on. Sunday night, 9 to midnight, only on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com. 6:25 in mid-Missouri, I'm Derek Gilbert, and with us is Peter Lavenda, author of Sinister Forces, a grimoire of American political witchcraft. Peter, when we left poor Lee Harvey Oswald, he was in the thrall of a group of people who were in contact with a group of extraterrestrials called the Nine. This Andreas Puharich, who was sort of the leader of that group that convened up in Maine, what did he do for the CIA again?
That's kind of ambiguous. He was one of the people who discovered Uri Geller, the famous psychic from Israel who could bend spoons with his mind, this sort of thing.
Right, yeah.
Uri Geller had written that he thought that Puharich was his CIA case officer, his handler. Puharich was only really involved in the bizarre aspects of intelligence. So anything to do with the supernatural, with ESP, with mind control ideas, also in the chemical biological warfare areas. Puharich was not, as far as we know, an agent officially of CIA. He was a military man, though. He had, the rank of major in the Army when he finally mustered out after the end of the Korean War. So he was, a major, and he had a high officer status. But I think that he never really lost his intelligence connections because he was constantly traveling around the world looking for new psychics. And Peter Hurkos was one of his discoveries, the famous Dutch psychic of the 1950s and 1960s, who was involved in trying to locate the Charles Manson murderers, for instance. So Puharich was always involved in that sort of cutting-edge technology of the mind control apparatus. So what he actually, who were his masters really, and who he really worked for, it's very hard to find out.
Cutting-edge mind control, but again, dealing with the supernatural. Now, I take it from the participation of Alan Dulles in the Warren Commission that these connections never came out in hearings?
No, they never did. Every time Ruth Payne got close to talking about these issues, Dulles would make some remark. He would step right in the middle of what she was saying and change the subject. I mentioned this in Sinister Forces, and I tell you where to look in the Warren Commissions, and I reprint part of it, so you can see it. It's pretty obvious.
So what influence might the Nine have had on Lee Harvey Oswald?
Well, I mean, he was surrounded by people involved with the Nine, only really at arm's length, but he was definitely surrounded by them. I don't know. It bothers me a great deal as to what the Nine might have been up to. If there was some conscious manipulation of Oswald by these human representatives of the Nine, I have to wonder what their ultimate purpose was. Do they really think they were saving humanity by leaving this guy in the Texas School Book Depository on November 22nd? So I don't know what their agenda is, and that's what disturbs me. A movie came out this year called The Good Shepherd.
Yeah.
Matt Damon is in it and Joe Pesci, and there's this famous interchange between the two of them. Joe Pesci is supposed to be, I think, Sam Giancana, the mafioso who was involved, some believe, in the Kennedy assassination, certainly mm-hmm. with the attempts on Castro. And Matt Damon's a CIA operative, and they have a little conversation. And Matt Damon essentially tells Joe Pesci, you know, we, the old white moneyed families in America, we're the real Americans. The rest of you are just visiting. And it's a very chilling statement for me when I hear that. And I wonder to myself sometimes if that was the point of view of the Nine, because they represented those families, those mm-hmm. old, ancient American families, going back to the Mayflower, that kind of money, and that kind of mentality. And I wondered, you know, if perhaps getting rid of Jack Kennedy was in their agenda. Maybe they thought they were doing the right thing. I mean, you know, what do I know?
With just a minute or so before the break, one final and odd little connection to the Nine. What was the connection with Gene Roddenberry, the creator of Star Trek, to this group?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Gene Roddenberry, I mean, he was one of the people in the later manifestations of the Nine. It's believed that Roddenberry got his idea for Star Trek because of his involvement with the Nine.
So he was sitting in on the seances?
No, he wasn't in the initial seances, no. But as the Nine branched out and started to become more active, and they were involved in places like the Esalen Institute in California mm-hmm. and with some scientific groups. They were cultivating physicists in particular. Roddenberry got involved with that crew, and that's how he made his connection with the Nine.
Interesting that he made the little collectives inside the Borg, the Nine.
Yeah.
I'm Derek Gilbert. We're talking with Peter Lavenda. He's the author of a 3-volume set called Sinister Forces, a Grimoire of American Political Witchcraft. Our conversation continues in just a moment, but first a look at what's happening around the world. We go to the 24-hour newsroom and Justin Offerman on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com.
Working without a map. This is Off-Road Friday on The Drive on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com.
Michael Savage is taking your vote at his website, michaelsavage.com. He wants to know basically whether you want him to run for president or not. I think Justin has voted for him so far at least 6-7 times. Yeah. Michael Savage and the Savage Nation coming up at 7:05 on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com. 6:35 in Mid-Missouri, I'm Derek Gilbert, and our guest on Off-Road Friday here on The Drive is Peter Lavenda. He's the author of a 3-volume set, thoroughly documented. A lot of what we've been saying over the last hour and for the next half hour is disturbing and, frankly, unbelievable. But the source material is there, and I encourage you to go to his website, sinisterforces.info, to look at the basics and get some sample chapters of the books. Peter, your third volume, a third book in this volume, Sinister Forces, The Manson Secret, you begin by detailing several very distasteful episodes of recent American history that most of us don't even know about. For example, the Finders, a group. Well, I'll let you describe the story. This didn't happen that long ago, but again, it's something that most people have never heard of. Who were the Finders?
Well, that's an interesting story. I mean, it's interesting because it made national press and then died almost immediately. What happened was in 1987, down here in Florida, I believe it was in Tallahassee area, some people saw a bunch of children running around a park. The children seemed to be ill-fed, filthy, dressed very poorly, And yet they were in the custody of a couple of well-dressed men who were driving a black van, I believe. The people got suspicious, the witnesses, and like good citizens, they called into the police and said, there's something very wrong here. The police showed up and took the children into custody, arrested the men. The men would not talk to the police. They gave them a card showing a phone number they were supposed to call. And that was the beginning of a roller coaster ride through some of the seamiest parts of the American intelligence apparatus. Because what happened next? The children were taken to the police station, and they did not appear to know how to use a telephone. They did not seem to know what a television set looked like. They didn't know anything about modern appliances. And yet they said they were being taken to a secret school in Mexico for smart children. Hmm. This was the story they had been told. As far as the men, they wouldn't speak whatsoever. But the phone numbers they had been given were in Washington, D.C. So the police went and executed a search warrant on the building connected to those phone numbers in Washington. It was a warehouse building. And inside that building, they found all sorts of documentation concerning trafficking in children, in human beings in general. They found passports with stamps for countries like North Korea, North Vietnam, Cuba, China, all sorts of suspicious places, especially at that time.
Right. That was during the Cold War.
During the Cold War.
Yeah. Well, even today, traveling to North Korea would be a red flag.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I don't think you can get a visa stamp for North Korea, quite frankly, in your U.S. passport. So all of this stuff was there, computer files showing all sorts of information traffic back and forth, instructions on how to break into buildings or crack safes, and all sorts of bizarre things, including a book, like a scrapbook with photographs of the children attending rituals. And in these rituals, animals were being sacrificed in front of the children. The men and women involved in these rituals were dressed in ritualistic robes. There were candles burning, all this sort of thing. And in some cases, the photographs appeared to be sexually explicit as well.
Hmm.
So, of course, everybody went nuts. The Metropolitan Police Department in Washington went crazy. They're getting ready to close this operation down and to arrest anybody connected with it because they have a mountain of evidence. And then suddenly, the detectives in charge are taken into a room with their captain, and there's a couple of guys there in suits, and they tell them this investigation's been terminated.
What?
And it was terminated at the instructions of the CIA.
Really?
Now, these documents came to light because the detectives involved in this thing were so angry and upset at what was going on that they actually went and published their records on the Internet. And eventually it was all picked up, and their stories did make it into U.S. News and World Report, into Newsweek, into a lot of the national media back in 1987 or so.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was the last we heard of it. It turned out that this group, calling itself the Finders, which was the group these children were involved with, and the men in the van were involved with, it turns out that the people who ran Finders were very closely connected to CIA and did contract work for CIA. We don't know exactly what. It appears to be computer workers, but that's the cover anyway. What possible reason they would have for subjecting children to this type of treatment and have the CIA covered up for them, of course, was never discussed because there was never an investigation.
No investigation.
None.
Author Peter Lavenda is discussing his book Sinister Forces, his three-volume set Sinister Forces, with us on the Eagle 93.9. So the Finders, and you know, Peter, this is not the first time I've heard of something like this. There was a brief report issued by a television station in northeast Iowa about a year and a half ago. You probably heard of the case of Johnny Gosch, the boy who disappeared at the age of 12.
Yes.
Some 20 years ago. A private detective hired by his mother, Noreen, went public and told the press that he'd been told that members of the CIA or people who were working for the CIA were out looking for young boys and were involved in his disappearance. That story disappeared within about a week. So the Finders were apparently contracted to the CIA for something. They were certainly involved in trafficking in child pornography, if not in children themselves.
Yes.
And these children, according to the photographic evidence that was left behind, were involved in these religious rituals involving the slaughter and disembowelment of animals like goats. the word satanic comes to mind.
Sure.
Now, Peter, how does all this tie back into the title of your third book in the series, The Manson Secret?
Well, I believe I talk about Charles Manson a lot in Sinister Forces because, for me, the Manson story is a touchstone for what it is that I'm trying to unravel. I believe that Manson, if you examine Manson's childhood, you will see a pattern of very serious abuse that began virtually from the moment he was born throughout his entire life. And I believe that this abuse of children, the mental abuse, the physical and sexual abuse of children, creates split personalities, as they used to call it, dissociative identity disorder, as they call it now, or a multiple personality disorder. I believe that what it does is it creates the perfect type of person to use as an assassin, as a Manchurian candidate. These are people who have compartmentalized their consciousness. So at one time they can be very sweet children, and at the next point they can be murderous individuals. And then one personality not having any memory of what the other personality has done. If you want to create multiple personality disorder, you take a child and you abuse them according to the way that Charles Manson was and according to the way that these children were being abused by the Finders. I think this is what the Manson secret really is. I think CIA discovered it very early on, how to create multiple personalities, how to manipulate consciousness, how to control memory. I mean, they had a psychiatrist in Montreal working for them who was specializing in what he called depatterning and psychic driving, and his research was funded by CIA, and that documentation is clear, unequivocal. And what he would do, he would take patients into a room in a kind of sensory deprivation environment, and through the use of drugs and the use of recordings that would say the same phrase over and over and over again for days, and hours upon hours every day, wipe out a person's memory until they became virtually an infant. I mean, without any control of themselves whatsoever, without even the conscious ability to speak. And then he would gradually build them up again, slowly but surely. That was his experimentation program, being funded by CIA. And I think what they found was, don't start with adults, start a little younger, and it's a little easier.
Where do the religious rituals fit into this?
Because they encapsulate the technology. In human history, we never had anything like psychology, brainwashing, or mind control until the 20th century. You know, before the 20th century, this area was the area of religion and mysticism and the occult. The technologies employed were rituals. You would invoke spirits, you would invoke demons, you had incense and candles and colors and all of this stuff, trying to create an emotional environment and a psychological environment in which you would have some measure of control over your own unconscious mind. And I think CIA recognized this. Some of their programs under MKUltra were designed to explore the occult. I mean, they even talked to Sybil Leek, the famous witch from England from the 1950s and 1960s. She mentions it in her autobiography. They went to a lot of occultists, and they tried to find out from them how they did what they did.
So you get this mental image of wizards and mages on this side of the Atlantic and on the far side of the Atlantic, somewhere in the Kremlin, you know, trying to cast spells on one another. Is that too far from reality?
Well, it isn't, actually. I mean, we know, for instance, in the 20th century, in the late 20th century, we had the phenomenon of remote viewing that became very well known. So we had the military involved in trying to psychically find out where the Russians had their missile silos. And the Russians were doing the same thing. Russian military was doing the same thing to the United States. It was a war of psychics, trying to find out secrets from the other side using only their psychic abilities. And they were training military personnel in this country to do this. And that remote viewing program went on for decades.
Now, wasn't there a case at Lawrence Livermore out in California where physicists tried to do this themselves?
Absolutely, yes. Lawrence Livermore was involved, as well as the Stanford Research Institute.
Really?
Which was really the center of it. I mean, that's where Puharich worked out of, and a lot of the other the famous psychics who were involved in the military research programs, all out of California at the SRI, Stanford Research Institute, and Lawrence Livermore, sure.
And what happened when these guys tried to mess around with this tactic, this technique?
Well, the remote viewing technique obviously worked. I mean, from all the accounts that we have, and there have been several books written in recent years detailing names, dates, places, and what was done. Obviously, it was having some success. There was some reaction against it within Congress, and they wanted to cut off the funding for it because they felt it was transgressing into areas that they didn't want to be responsible for. They thought it had satanic overtones or religious overtones that they were nervous about. And there was even a question of, would this lead to some kind of fascism? Because of the association of fascism with the occult, like the Nazis with the occult back in the 1930s and 40s. So there was this fear among some congressmen that maybe this was not a moral thing to do.
Yeah. Finally. The technique of creating these split, these multiple personalities, you say
yes.
The CIA discovered this somewhere early on. Was this a technique that they learned from the Nazi scientists that were smuggled into the country under Operation Paperclip, or is this something they developed on their own?
Well, I mean, they based a lot of their initial research on Nazi research. Whether the Nazis had been able to create multiple personalities or not, we don't know, because those documents are gone forever.
Hmm.
And the people who were responsible for these programs have all died and refused to talk, like Sidney Gottlieb at the very end. So we don't know. We don't know if this was a Nazi program or not. What we do know is the Nazi connection was such that it opened up the doors for American science to start pursuing these same avenues. They were pursuing mind control. In my book, I talk about some of the drug documents we found that the Nazis had been trying to burn at the very end, and their experiments with mescaline and their experiments with marijuana and different oils and extracts of these drugs. So there was definitely this attempt by the Germans to do this. Whether they were successful or not, I don't know. And how much information they gave to CIA, I really don't know. I have to say, because of the destruction of the documents, we won't know. We only know what CIA itself did, and that's a lot. That information we do have enough to, you know, to make our hair turn white prematurely.
Yeah. We're talking with author Peter Lavenda. His 3-book set, which is excellent, Sinister Forces, A Grimoire of American Political Witchcraft, 3 books. Book 1, The Nine. Book 2, A Warm Gun. Book 3, The Manson Secret. This is Off-Road Friday, and believe me, we are covering the path far less traveled today. I'm Derek Gilbert. Our final segment coming up on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com.
Off-Road Friday. This is The Drive with Derek Gilbert on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com.
We really need to look at the music we're using for bumpers on Friday. This is a great song, but it just doesn't seem to fit the mood. We're talking with author Peter Lavenda. Sinister Forces, his 3-volume work, the website sinisterforces.info. As we were discussing in the last segment, Peter, you were talking about the CIA's success in discovering the technique to create multiple personalities and then to perhaps program them for specific tasks. One of the things that we found from the finders and the evidence that leaked out there was the inclusion of rituals that could only be described as satanic. Was the CIA attempting to create for lack of a better way of describing it, a demonically infused Manchurian candidate?
Wow. I wish I had written that. I don't think that the CIA literally believed in anything like demons and angels. The CIA thought that all of this language, the jargon of the occult, was just an ancient, archaic way of explaining a technology that they hoped to discover using these experiments. And for me, that is where the problem lies, because they ignored the spiritual dimension of what they were doing. They looked at the human soul, at the human mind, at the human spirit, as a tool to be manipulated. There was no sense of what they were doing to the psyches of these people they were experimenting upon. Whether they were violent offenders in an institution or people in a mental institution, or whether they were simply people on the wrong side of the law, you know, petty criminals, prostitutes, people like that, it doesn't matter. What they were doing was they were going into the brains and the hearts and souls of these people and trying to manipulate them without any spiritual understanding, without any spiritual safeguards whatsoever. The danger came from that. They opened a Pandora's box. They used the technology like the Sorcerer's Apprentice in Fantasia, you know, where you have Mickey Mouse and all the little brooms dancing around and causing all this mayhem. And that's basically what CIA was doing in those days. What they were doing was they were using the technology without understanding it, without understanding the ramifications of it. We've had fallout from that. We've had, for instance, Jonestown as an excellent example. I talk about Jonestown a lot in Sinister Forces because here we have someone who was a religious leader, who was involved with a CIA program himself, who was very closely involved. Jim Jones was very closely involved with a guy called Dan Mitrione, who was a torturer for CIA. I mean, he went down to Latin America and taught the police forces down there how to interrogate suspects and interrogate prisoners. These people grew up in the same small town in Indiana, and their travel patterns were the same. They knew each other. And we find out later through another researcher called Jim Hogan that Jim Jones had a CIA file. So here's somebody who combined religion and politics and then went down to Guyana and managed to massacre over 900 people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we have fallout, dangerous fallout, in this combination of religion, occultism, the intelligence agencies, and politics. It's a very deadly mixture because the people who are in control of this are not exactly spiritual people. We're not talking Mother Teresa here.
No.
We're talking about people who wouldn't even recognize a Mother Teresa, who wouldn't recognize a spiritual dimension in this, who consider themselves scientists.
All done in the name of truth, justice, and the American way.
That's right.
And in a very real sense, it seems they've opened Pandora's box.
I believe they have. I believe they've set demons loose on the streets in a metaphorical sense, if not a literal one.
And so that would be the Manson secret. Charlie Manson is the result.
Charlie Manson is the result. And if you look at Charlie Manson's life, you can duplicate the technology and you can create your own Charles Manson from scratch, if you like. And I think that's what Finders was doing.
Hmm. Peter, where do people find the three book set, Sinister Forces?
Okay, glad you asked. Of course, you can get it on Amazon, like virtually everything else in print.
Mm-hmm.
You can also call a toll-free number and order it directly from the publisher, and that number is 1-800-556-2012. You can also go onto the website that you mentioned, www.sinisterforces.info. You can order the books directly from the website as well.
I've read about 2.5 of the books. I'm still working my way through The Manson Secret, but I've got to say, Peter, that this is extremely well-researched. How much time did you put into research of this?
Wow, I started the research for this book back during Watergate.
Okay, so...
We're talking since 1975, roughly.
Very well-researched and very disturbing, eye-opening, and Peter, appreciate you taking time out of your Friday night to join us here on the Eagle 93.9.
Not at all. My pleasure.
Peter LaVenda, the author of Sinister Forces, a 3-volume set, The Nine, Book 1, Book 2 called A Warm Gun, and Book 3 just released The Manson Secret. That's Off-Road Friday for today. I'm Derek Gilbert. Next week, it's the best of Off-Road Friday. I'm taking the night off. Back on Monday. Stick around. Michael Savage and the Savage Nation takes over next on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle 939.com.